Hello there and welcome back to the Nerd Podcast. That's Never Ending Retro Dialogue. I'm Jordan.
I'm Doug.
And today we have a special guest with us.
We do. Two episodes in a row now.
That's right. That's right. We're branching out into things we're not experts about. Or, well, this episode is more than last episode. Last episode we needed all the help.
But it was his idea.
Oh, that's true.
Yes. So we have with us one Travis Long.
Hello, hello.
How long ago?
Gosh, have we known each other?
Yeah, like the early 2000s, right?
Yeah. Yep, wow. We started working together in, might have even been 99.
Yep. So, been quite a while. So, you have a background in what we're about ready to talk to about, right?
Yes.
Isn't that what your degree's in?
Yes. So yes. I didn't finish, but yes.
Oh,
went
yes.
to film school at Wright State University from 2000 to 2005. Did, you know, laid low after that, but am a filmmaker now. Had a short film released last year. Played a number of festivals in the Midwest.
Nice.
And I'm working on another one currently. So happy to be here with cool. a couple of fellow nerds.
Yeah. So this episode came by, let's see, what was that? December last year?
Yeah, right before Christmas.
Yes.
We were
at a volunteer event together, and Travis came up to me and said, you should do Good Bad Guys.
Yeah, your favorite bad guys. Who are the best bad guys in movie history?
And then I think we spent the next 6 hours just
throwing characters back and forth.
So
Yeah.
So I thought that sounded like a great idea. Jordan did too. And Lord knows we could talk about movies for a while. So
yeah, we've done it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're gonna do the best bad guys, favorite bad guys, an actor who made the role just, you know, amazing. However you want to do it. And we talked before we got off. So I was glad to hear. So Travis and I were on the same wavelength. Nowhere will I be talking about any kind of horror villains like Jason or
okay.
Michael Myers or Freddy.
Yeah, it made sense for it to be fun and interesting. I mean, you could do a whole list of just horror bad guys. So I think to make it fun,
yeah,
I'm happy to leave those aside for now.
Yeah.
And then I do want to hear what you're going to say, because I also said, obviously, Jordan will know this too, my favorite villain of all time is Darth Vader, but I didn't feel like bringing him into this too. We've already done a Star Wars episode,
right.
And, you know, again, for interest, but I want to hear what you want to say.
Yeah, no, I did not include him on the list, and that's, look, I'm not going to argue with anyone who would put Darth Vader on their best bad guy list.
Mm-hmm.
He's the prototypical bad guy, but I think in that same vein, he's the picture of the bad guy that came with the frame.
Gotcha.
Darth Vader's not on my list.
Fair.
But we'll stipulate
right.
he is a great bad guy.
Yeah, he's going to be number one on almost everybody's list.
Yeah.
Literally the list I'm looking at right now, he's number one.
Of course.
Even before you Google it, a little image comes up with him on it. So.
Oh, that's hilarious.
So, yeah.
Now, did you put any animated movie villains in this?
I did not.
Because I didn't either. But for briefest of moments, I thought about what the heck is the name from Toy Story 3?
Lots of Huggin' Bear.
All right. But then I also thought about, so I'll give him an honorable mention right now, Christopher Lloyd's character.
That's what I was thinking.
In Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Oh, no.
To the extent that counts as an animated movie, and I guess it does, yeah.
I hadn't
even thought of that.
Yeah, but he's a great bad guy in that. But I didn't write him down either because I'm like, huh.
I will tell you where that is a theme. It hits one of the themes in my list. What I noticed, and I wasn't doing this consciously or anything, nearly everyone on my list was in a film that came out between 1988 and 2007.
Oh, okay.
So now look, at first I'm like, you know, I'm looking at it at the end, I'm like, is this because of my age? Is this because of the movies I've seen? But then I'm like, no, we truly had some of the greatest bad guys in the 90s and early 2000s,
mm-hmm.
hands down.
Well, and if you think about too, most of the bad guys, especially in the older movies, now there's some exceptions like Robert Mitchum's character. Oh my gosh,
he's on my list.
Is he okay?
He's the one. It's like two that aren't or three that didn't that were pre 88.
Night of the Hunter, right?
Night of the Hunter.
Yeah, oh my God, he's such a.
Yes.
He's such a good bad guy in that.
Reverend Harry Powell.
Yeah. Oh man, but I'm the same way. I think I have one, two. Two that's pre-1980s.
Yeah.
But
it just shook out that way.
Well, and don't you think most villains were throwaways in a lot of movies, especially in the older ones, because it's just...
I think so. I think there was probably a... I think they never wanted to make them too bad.
Correct.
They didn't want to be off-putting to audiences, so I think you didn't... You know, and there are a few notable exceptions. Richard Widmark's character... I can't remember the name of the noir film. You know, where he pushes the woman down the stairs.
Oh gosh, that's terrific.
You know, that's one of those few exceptions. But you're right; most of the bad guys were pretty cookie cutter.
Yeah, Yul Brynner in Westworld.
Oh,
that'd be one from. But I mean, you're still talking mid 70s by that point, right?
I think the 70s starts to be okay. Like one that's on my list is Nurse Ratched, from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. So. Yeah, there's definitely, I think Hollywood started being okay with bad guys starting in the 60s, being really bad.
Well, and you probably started to see, and correct me if I'm wrong, more of the celebration of the anti-hero even too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like the Wild Bunch, I think about the Wild Bunch, and I mean, technically none of those guys are good guys.
Right.
They're just better than... the bad guy.
Yeah.
But so.
Yeah, in true Peckinpah fashion.
Oh
yeah.
My gosh, what a great movie. But anywho, do you want to get started, Jordan?
Do I want to get started?
Or would you let's let our guest go first.
Yeah, let's let him go first.
Okay. Well, so one interesting thing that sort of materialized on my list without me realizing it was that there are two actors who have more than one character on my list.
Same.
So I'll start with one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll start with one of them, and that is Kevin Spacey, who played both Kaiser Soze and John Doe. So Kaiser Soze in The Usual Suspects and John Doe in Seven in the same year, 1995. So Kevin Spacey is one, and then the other one is Gary Oldman, who played Dracula, to the extent that we consider him a bad guy. And then he also played the corrupt DEA agent in Luc Besson's The Professional.
Yes.
So those are the two actors that have multiple places on my list.
Well, I'm glad that we didn't have the same ones then. I almost put Gary Oldman, though, for The Fifth Element, because that character in that is just
super
so...
quirky, yes. Super, twisted.
But his guy in The Professional is just so... That movie still... I don't watch it all the time, because it's just... You got to be in the right kind of mood, I think. But man, it is just...
It's really good, and he I don't know that the movie would be nearly as good without
correct.
Him.
Oh, no. You need that tension he brings and just that awkwardness, because you're just like...
Yeah. Yeah, Gene Reno is not, you know, at the time, I don't know that he was a good leading man. I mean, he was right for the role, the low-key hitman. He plays the social awkwardness well, but without Natalie Portman and Gary Oldman, I don't know that movie would be where it is now.
I agree. Oh, well, I'll do my two doubles then.
Yeah.
So the first one I had was Alan Rickman.
Yep.
Who obviously was Hans and Hans. He wasn't Hans.
He was Gruber. Yeah.
Hans Gruber. Gruber.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Hans Gruber. There we go. And Die Hard. And then just because I have a soft spot in my heart for Westerns, Marsden and Quigley Down Under.
I'll let you finish, but here's where I would have... So he was almost a third person on my list that had two.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had him as Hans Gruber.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also had him playing... the outstanding version Sheriff of the Sheriff of Nottingham.
Yep, I almost put the third one on here.
I forgot about Quigley, honestly.
Because He is literally the best part of that movie.
Yeah.
As the sheriff in Nottingham.
Yeah.
I mean,
no, 100%. Yeah. Morgan Freeman does well, but Rickman steals the movie.
He absolutely does, which he does a lot of times. But obviously, Hans Gruber's like, when you're talking about the 80s and 90s, I mean, that is...
Yeah, 1988, square.
Yep. Right in the middle of it, and it's just such the perfect bad guy. And that was like his first major Hollywood role, correct?
I think it was, yeah.
Which just blows my mind.
Yeah. And it kind of set... It's, you know, those three Die Hard movies, it kind of set the bar so high for the bad guy. I think that's where one of the reasons Die Hard 2 is
correct.
Not nearly as memorable as 1 and 3, Die Hard with a Vengeance. Mm-hmm. Jeremy Irons comes in and gives us a really good bad guy in Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Yeah.
But, you know, unmemorable performance. I agree.
And then quickly down under, Tom Selleck, Western Australia. I don't know. I'll watch that final shootout scene between him and Tom Selleck. At least once a month. It's just, I don't know why, but it's just, you know, that line, some men are born in the wrong century, I was born on the wrong continent. It's not a great line, but I love it. The second guy I had was Javier, God, I can't speak today. I might have a stroke on air.
Oh, no.
Bardem, No Country for Old Men, and then Silva in Skyfall. Skyfall's probably my favorite Daniel Craig Bond movie, and his villain, to me, his villain kind of went back to, although it was obviously a little bit more modern, but the whole just weird bad guy, Bond bad guy.
I will go you one further.
Okay.
And say that Skyfall is the high water mark for the James Bond franchise in most areas. It had the best cinematography, it had the best theme song, and yes, Javier Bardem's performance as Carlos Silva is hands down the best of any Bond villain, and I felt, he didn't make necessarily my list, but I noted him in here because I had him for No Country, and I noted that 5 years later he does the Bond villain, and for my money, he was snubbed of an Oscar nomination.
Agreed.
But yeah, no. Truly memorable. Yeah, that's a good choice.
Do you want to talk about the nuances of his character Antoine in No Country? Because, I mean, that is literally, in my mind, every time I watch that movie, that has just got to be one of the coldest bad guys. Just
He's just
indeterminate.
Yeah, he's not even a person. He's just this force that just, no matter how, it's like that, it's like the nightmare of no matter how fast you run, the person chasing you is right behind you, and he's never moving. He's never moving fast, but he's right there.
He's
behind.
Such a great performance. Now, did he win for that? I was going to say I thought so, which is deserved. My God.
And in his speech, he made the remark about the haircut, the terrible haircut that they gave him, and he said that with that haircut, he was sure to never get laid for some amount of time. But yeah, no, he was great.
Yeah. Well, there we go. Off to a good start.
Yeah.
Man, top that.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going in any particular order here. I'm just going to go. I'm going with the thing I saw last night. I went to they were showing Blade Runner last night at the Gateway.
Oh, I almost put him on there.
So I was thinking about this last night, and I was like, I got to talk about Rutger Hauer.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a good choice.
Because Roy Batty, kind of interesting villain, because I was watching the movie again. This is the first time I'd seen it in maybe 5 years. I was watching it, and up to a certain point, I'm like, is he really the bad guy of this movie? Like, because, like, he just wants to live, basically. And he does murder somebody, but then he also saves Rick Deckard at the end, and you're like, so I was kind of confused, but he's such a great villain, and obviously he has that monologue at the end that's just like, so that, I was watching that, and I was thinking about this the whole time, because I was like, Rick Deckard is almost more of a surly bad guy than Roy Batty, because Roy just wants to live.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Hey, this is some foreshadowing for a conversation later in the episode.
Oh.
All right.
Okay. But yeah, and then at the end he just dies in the rain, and I was just like, wow, it's kind of a tragic figure really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah.
I'm glad you brought him
up. Yeah. I had to, because I was like, as he was dying, I was like, oh man, what a great villain, like, but not a villain kind mm-hmm. of. So
yeah. All right, go for it, man.
You want me to? Okay.
Go ahead.
So the 90s, like we said, had some truly, truly memorable villains. And one of those, oh, I could pick from any of these. So Robert De Niro is Max Cady in Cape Fear.
Ooh, so, okay, yeah.
I am one of those people that is of the opinion that Martin Scorsese's remake of Cape Fear is superior to the original Cape Fear, and this is one of the reasons why. Nothing wrong with the performances of the performance of Mitchum in the original,
mm-hmm.
but my gosh,
no.
How creepy is Robert De Niro in this film? And he rightly got an Oscar nomination for it.
He almost doesn't look like him.
Right. Yeah, he doesn't. So this great career playing different characters. The two bad guys that are super memorable for me are him in Cape Fear, and then him is Al Capone in The Untouchables.
So I just realized that he was my third that had two, because I had Capone for Untouchables.
Yeah, The Untouchable one, I didn't make my list, but I made the note, like his, you know, it, truly memorable.
Yeah.
Like this, you know, the scene where he beats the guy's head on with a baseball bat. Yes. I mean, he really doesn't have a lot of screen time in that movie. I think he's in like three or four scenes total. Yeah. But just enough to really steal it.
Sometimes that's all you need.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, since we're talking about De Niro, let's just go ahead and do this, because I want to make sure we keep it fresh what you were just talking about. So I had De Niro for Capone and Untouchables, but I had him for Neil in Heat, which is just one of my favorite movies of all time. It's Michael Mann, as far as I'm concerned, Last Mohicans and Heat. That's all I need, and I'm happy. But you brought up, is Rutger Hauer's character really a bad guy? So in Heat, is Neil the bad guy? Because if when you look at it, he's just wanting to live. He's trying to do this last score. He wants to get in, get out. He's found, what's her name? Amy Brenneman. Mm-hmm. And maybe he can actually have a life. And here's Al Pacino, who's, you know, an alcoholic cop who's, you know, on his second wife, not much of a husband, and all
Third
of this.
Wife.
Third wife. Oh, you're right. You're right. So it's one of those movies. It's like, depending on how you watch it and interpret it, his whole crew could be the good guys, because they're just trying to, you know.
Heat's one of the greatest American crime films ever made.
Mm-hmm.
And what you just described about the difference between good guys and bad guys is kind of Michael Mann's whole thing. All of his films are about the line
mm-hmm.
between the good guy and the bad guy. Whether it's Collateral, whether it's Manhunter, Heat. I mean, they're all in some way about that weird line.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't include necessarily Neil McCauley is on my list, but Heat's amazing for all the reasons that you just mentioned.
But I want to take a detour real quick since he brought up Collateral. Because this is how my brain works.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise
as the bad guy.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's like his one and only venture into being a real bad guy, right?
I think he has, from where I'm sitting, he has two others.
Okay. And Interview with the Vampire, is that one of them?
Yes.
Okay.
And the other one is Tropic Thunder.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah. But the point I think you're about to make is a correct one. His best performances are when he plays bad guys.
Yeah.
In my opinion. He's a very good actor, born on the 4th of July and the whole bit.
Yeah.
But his work in Collateral is outstanding.
Yeah.
And his work in Tropic Thunder is freaking hilarious.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even know he was in it. We went and saw that in the theater. And
you almost forget.
Yeah. And I'm sitting there going, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah.
Oh, and we lost it.
Yeah, and you know he's clearly playing some
somebody
he knows, you know, a Weinstein or somebody that he
somebody. Yeah. But so are there any other actors you can think of off the top of your head who's usually the good guy, who doesn't usually do the bad guy, but they've delved into it a couple times and just hit it out of the park?
Yeah, I think De Niro is that one. I think more often, I think his bad guy roles are the ones I remember the most.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and depending on what you think of The Godfather and where what that all is.
Well, there's another one that kind of blurs the line too, right?
Yeah. I don't know if there's anybody else. There was one that I kind of had an honorable mention sort of thing in there. Mm-hmm. That sort of answers the question you're asking. So Timothy Oliphant played a couple of good bad guys. I mean, he's known for being in Justified and being this pretty face. But in the movie Go and in the fourth Die Hard movie, he mm-hmm. played a couple of pretty memorable bad guys.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That kind of is a...
Interesting. I was racking my brain earlier trying to think of someone. Like, I was trying to think of, like, Jeff Bridges. You know, it's like trying to think if he's ever been, like...
He's almost better as a good guy.
Besides Iron Man.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I couldn't think of anything else he's done. He's always just...
Yeah, my favorite stuff of his is when he's the Big Lebowski and then his minor role as the president in The Contender.
Oh, The Contender is such a great movie. You know, oh, my gosh.
Best work that doesn't get talked about is that.
Yeah, agreed. All right. Sorry.
That's fine. I'm just trying to remember this one because I'm sticking with the theme of like robots and AI. I'm going to go with HAL 9000. I don't know who voices HAL 9000. I didn't see it on there, but HAL 9000 is like to me the best part of 2001: A Space Odyssey. And I found that's kind of a divisive film. Like people really love it or they hate it. I don't know mm-hmm. about you guys, but I liked it once. And I get it. Like when it's hard to get past the first long part, but the part where HAL is being disassembled or whatever, and he's singing, like lives in my head. It's so scary, and just his actions as a villain. Just and again, maybe I guess he was also trying to do self-preservation. Just like Roy Batty. Sure. So maybe that's my criteria. Like you're a bad guy, but you just want to live. But and I think he's one of the more prominent villains in my mind because his design is so simplistic. It's just the eye, and that's all you need. And you know, like I was scrolling through lists and I saw that and I knew like right away who it was. You know, it's I think it's great, but I know not technically a character act like a character an actor, but that's
no. It's interesting. I hadn't thought of that. That I like that.
Look at you bringing out the weird.
I love it. I'm just thinking about the robots.
The robots. Oh, I didn't put him down. Thinking about robots.
Who's that?
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I was gonna say Terminator next.
Oh man, I'm sorry. No, stole your thunder.
No, it's just funny because I'm like, I'm just sticking. All my bad guys are robots. So,
well, I actually think that's great because I didn't include any robots.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I like that. Okay. Cool.
Although, what would okay? So, I guess my question is about Terminator. Who's a better villain, Terminator, Arnold Schwarzenegger, or Robert Patrick's Terminator?
Robert Patrick.
Oh, yeah, okay. Robert Patrick. Yeah.
He's far scarier to me because with his running and his scissor hands.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Now, can you imagine the Terminator if they would have stuck with O.J. Simpson?
Was that the original plan?
That's the original plan.
Oh, my.
According to Arnold, I watched an interview not too long ago where he was actually he was going to meet with Cameron to be Michael Biehn's character. Huh. But they start talking about the Terminator. And so Arnold's like, well, what you've got to do is you've got to make sure that they become a robot. They can't just act like a robot. They've got to be a robot. And so he was giving all these notes to Cameron. And so by the end, they're like, no, we want you to be this. But he originally didn't want to be it. Because he didn't want to get typecast as a bad guy.
Mm.
He wanted to be, you know, a hero. Because he had already done Conan and whatnot. And so, yeah, it was an interesting interview. Because I mean, could you imagine O.J. Simpson as the Terminator?
And those are always my favorite stories. Like the you know, Robert De Niro wanted to be James Caan's character in The Godfather. He read for the part and did a great job reading for it. But it just wasn't right for what Coppola was looking for, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so we ended up with what we ended up with, and the rest is history. And Pulp Fiction, Bruce Willis wanted to be one of the hitmen.
Yeah.
And it took Tarantino forever to talk him off of that and to convince him that he was perfect for Butch. And of course he is.
Yes.
Those stories fascinate me.
There's another movie where is there really a good guy in that?
Which one? Pulp Fiction?
Pulp Fiction.
Mm, yeah.
But as we were talking before Jordan showed up, a lot of his movies are like that. They're all kind of, all the characters are so flawed that.
Yeah, I mean, they're all, The Hateful Eight is just a movie of bad guys.
Yes.
Nothing but a bunch of bad guys
Absolutely. Except maybe the.
Well, while we're talking about it then.
Yes.
I did, on my list is Colonel Hans Landa.
Yeah, mine too.
Yep.
There was no way I was going to leave him off. I pretty much, from the moment I started this list, he was like among the two or three that I knew was going to be on there no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And
again, that was his first major Hollywood role, correct?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tarantino tells a story about when he was writing the film, he got to a point where he realized, and he may have gone to Lawrence Bender and told him, I think when he's telling the story, he had to go to Lawrence Bender and say, look, I don't think we can make this movie. And Lawrence Bender, or whoever he's talking to, says, well, why? And he goes, well, I've written this character of, you know, Colonel Hans Landa, and he has to be able to speak German, Italian, he has to be able to do this, that, and the other. There is nobody out there that can do this. And Bender, or whoever he's talking to, says, well, why don't you just let me see what I can do? And I can't remember how he comes and reads for the part, and they were like, they just knew it immediately.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it nearly derailed it as he's writing it, because he's like, I'm writing this. Nobody can do all these things. And sure as shit, not only can he do them, he shows up, he wins the Oscar for it.
Yeah.
And then he uses them again in Django Unchained.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just so good in Inglourious Basterds.
Yes, he is.
That opening is probably the best opening of any of Tarantino's films. I mean, it's just so good.
I would agree with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember us a few years ago when you were I hadn't seen it yet, and you were telling me about the opening, and you're like, you of all people have got to see this, and yeah.
Because it feels like the opening of a Western.
Yes. Mm. Yes.
And that's why I knew you would like it.
Yeah. Just fun movie. Oh my gosh. You got anything?
Just that he was on my list, and
yeah, he was on mine too.
I was like, oh man, do I want to put a Nazi on this list? But he plays that part so perfectly, and every line he delivers is just like, when he goes, it's a bingo, I'm like, that's like my favorite line that he does. I don't know why.
Everything
he does is just, yeah, and when he, I don't know, it's hard to picture that as anybody.
No. Yeah. Anybody and that whole scene in the theater, he's always five steps ahead of everyone up until the very end. I mean, even when they're standing in the crowded theater and he's talking to them, he's clearly taunting them.
Yeah.
He's telling them without telling them, I know that you're all bullshitting and you're all here by mocking them, by making them speak in their awful accent. he's just ahead of everybody and he plays it so well. It's amazing.
Oh, gosh. That's too funny. Well, let me, I will talk about, gosh, you know what? I just noticed I had someone else that had two. Son of a gun. Well, I'll go ahead and talk about them because two people that played the same role.
Like, I know where we're going.
Yep.
Yeah, me too.
And so it's not going to be a surprise, and that's Jack Nicholson for the Joker and Heath Ledger for the Joker. Now, Jack Nicholson, really quick, I had him for two because of his role in The Departed. Now, I do not like The Departed. I find the movie to be slightly overrated.
Which is bizarre, because it's the one Scorsese finally wins.
Best
director and all that. I know. No, I tend to feel the same way, but go ahead.
But the way he plays it, and then hearing Matt Damon tell stories about Nicholson on the set and how he would do scenes, and he would just, like, go over the top. He would just keep amping it up. That way they could just choose whatever they wanted, was just hilarious. And I'm just sitting there going, here's this dude that just, that like when they're on the beach and they're, what is it? They've got, was it the girl?
I've never seen The Departed.
Oh, well, you're probably okay. was it a girl that they're about ready to kill?
On the beach?
Remember. Oh, I could be wrong. Because again, I've only watched it a couple times because I didn't care for it. But he would just keep making what they would do to her so much more horrible every time to see what they would end up using. Always, I'm like, you know what? That's pretty twisted. That's well, he could have been a lot worse.
I don't know why I didn't think of this before, because he deserves to be on there, but his portrayal of Colonel Nathan Jessup, I don't know why I didn't put that on
here. I didn't have it on here either. He could have been a triple,
So yeah, the Joker and A Few Good Men. Wow.
But yeah, Heath Ledger's Joker. So I forget who I was talking to a couple days ago, but literally, The Dark Knight is a Joker movie, in my mind.
Yeah.
I mean, I love it. Yeah. I still... Of the three, Batman Begins is still my favorite. It's the one I'll rewatch more than anything, even though I know Dark Knight is like just a superbly made movie.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it's not a Batman movie per se, I don't think. It feels more like you're just mesmerized by his performance, which is the whole point. It's
yeah, and like his Joker and Nicholson's Joker is amazing in its like sort of dark humor.
Yes.
It's all for laughs. Mm-hmm. And then Ledger's is memorable because it's like he brings a creepy, dark rationality to it.
Yes.
All. You know, a million people die in a war or whatever it is, and then but one senator dies and everyone loses their mind. I mean, Everything he says in that movie is very... they're two very different Jokers, but they're mm-hmm. two very great Jokers.
Yes.
It's wild that they were that one role can be that famous, played by two different people and written two different ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the Batman role is kind of there. Not, well, I shouldn't say there, but like he's Batman, you know? He can't really be interpreted differently, I don't think.
Not in that one, no. Not, yeah, really. It's... Yeah.
So, yeah, Joker was on my list too, but...
I just keep stealing all your stuff.
I think we're going to have a lot of similar...
I would imagine so. But,
yeah, and it's interesting because... I don't think that I don't know that the 89 Batman is as much a movie about the Joker, but it has always been interesting to me that Jack Nicholson is top billing.
Yeah.
So to me, I'm like, oh, it's the Joker and Batman, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they had to promise him
that. Oh, I think that was a condition that he, yeah.
Well, again, talking about stories, and you probably already know this, but I guess who was it? Someone else was going to be the Joker, and. Or they invented someone else who's going to be the Joker because Nicholson said he didn't want to do it. They're like, okay, well, we'll go with this person. We're going to give him this much money. And then finally, you know.
To trick him into, yeah.
To take him. It's just like,
oh, I had not heard that. But interestingly, the Batman, the Tim Burton Batman is the first movie I ever remember seeing in a theater. Oh. That would have been, I don't know, 6 or 7 at the time. I'm not saying I didn't see something before that. That's my earliest memory of seeing a movie in the theater. Yeah. Pretty good one to be your first.
Yeah. Absolutely. My gosh. All right. What else
well,
you got?
Well, I want to stick with that theme real quick of Batman villains. Paul Dano in The Batman.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which I haven't seen, but I heard okay. he was good.
He was great in that movie. He's like full-on psychopath. And like,
yeah.
Paul Dano is just a good actor.
Mm-hmm.
But man, his role as the Riddler... He just, you want to talk about interpreting a character differently. He took the Riddler and was like,
oh, yeah, he was, that was not like a Riddler you have ever seen before in any form.
Yeah, he's not, yeah, he's no Frank Gorshin, he's no Jim Carrey.
No, he's not.
But it was legitimately scary, like watching that movie in theaters. I was like, oh my gosh. And like, they tied it into a lot of real life stuff with the internet, like Reddit and stuff. And I was just like, this is, but. Yeah, I just thought about that while we were talking about Batman villains. I don't know that he's going to... He may not go down as one of the greatest ever to do it, but while we're talking about Batman villains, I'm like...
Yeah, oh no, he definitely...
Paul Dano's up there in terms of... Because he did for the Riddler. I think he did for the Riddler what Heath Ledger did for the Joker, you know?
Oh, I would agree. Absolutely.
But, yeah, but, you know, Batman Returns managed to cobble together multiple memorable villains.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like the aggregate of them
mm-hmm.
Was almost as memorable as Joker from the original movie. The Penguin is just so wild and, I still think of Christopher Walken as being a villain, you know, one of the main villains in that movie.
Yeah.
And, of course, Michelle Pfeiffer. But
yeah. Well, Batman's always going to... I think Batman movies in general are going to suffer from their... Not suffer, but they're always going to have that effect where it's like the villains are...
Always more interesting than Batman.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like...
Except for Batman and Robin.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And I will never have that problem.
That's true.
That film will never have
that problem. Nobody was interesting in that movie. No.
Oh, holy rusted metal, Doug.
Oh, man. Oh, gosh. I don't know whose turn it is. Go ahead, man.
I don't know either. Well, we're living in the 90s. I'll throw a couple out there. One I know you'll be particularly interested in, Doug. The first one is Howard Payne in Speed, played by Dennis Hopper.
Oh, nice.
And the other is, of course, Little Bill, played by Gene Hackman.
Oh, there we go.
So I'll let you say what you want to say about him, because that's your...
Well, so I'll back up, because what was interesting when we were having that conversation when we were working is... We kind of put Westerns off to the side.
Yeah.
And we start talking about all the Western villains, which Westerns especially, most of the villains are kind of throwaway. I mean, there's a few good ones, but like I was trying to think of all the other Clint Eastwood movies and his Westerns, and their villains are okay, but they're nothing, you know, it's...
Yeah.
It's just Clint Eastwood against the odds, right? And then in a couple of them, you know, like High Plains Drifter, yeah, they're bad guys, but his character's not exactly great either.
Right.
You know, when you essay a character within the first 15 minutes of the movie, that's not a good look.
Right.
But Unforgiven and Little Bill with Gene Hackman, and I think we both agreed, he is the best villain in any Western.
Yeah, well, the only one that comes close is the one that you brought up when we talked about this that day, and that's Henry Fonda in Once Upon a Time in the West. For me, he's very unnerving in a completely different way than Little Bill is.
Yeah.
And a pretty brilliant piece of casting there. That's not something you would think of if you're just going to... We need a bad guy for our Western. Let's get Henry Fonda.
He's one of the ones who usually plays the good guy, and here we
are. Truly worked out in that film, and it definitely worked out for Gene Hackman and Unforgiven.
Yeah. I mean, that... Yeah. I could keep going on and on. But I want to ask you, so we can talk about this, because we also talked about The Searchers. And my suggestion is that
he's the bad guy.
That John Wayne's actually the bad guy in that. You have the Native American that you know ransacked his family, but I mean, there are clear cut signs that him and his sister-in-law have some kind of thing on the side. He's obviously done some nefarious things after the war. You know, he's got all that money. Where'd it come from? And then, obviously, he wants to kill his niece because, you know,
she's
a crossbreed Indian now. And he's constantly not recognizing, you know, the adopted son of his brother that was supposed to be a crossbreed. So, yeah, I mean, it's...
No, there's every case in the world to be made that he's the bad guy in that film.
Yeah, and again...
A sympathetic one, in a way.
Oh, absolutely.
By the end, you know, the final shot of the film, him, you know, leaving the house
kind
himself,
of
get, the loner again out there in the world. I mean...
Not necessarily redemption, but, you know...
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe he's on a different path, but anywho.
But yeah, I did have to throw Dennis Hopper from Speed in there. I mean, that was just a really memorable bad guy.
He plays some... Yeah, Dennis Hopper, he plays some good bad guys.
Yep, even in Waterworld, you know,
yeah,
he's a fun bad
which
guy.
I think gets drugged too much.
Unnecessarily shit on.
Yeah. It's an enjoyable watch. I think so.
Yeah, I mean, look, had the general public not known how much that money, how much that movie cost to be made, nobody would. That's the only reason it gets shit on.
Yeah.
Is that it was a box office bomb, and it just... Now, for the record, I think by now it's made its money back.
I don't know that thing,
I think that's in the black.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it just got unnecessarily dragged just because of how much it cost to make.
Yeah, I would agree. Well, hey, let's stick with Kevin Costner because I have him as a bad guy.
All right.
Mr. Brooks. Have you ever watched it?
No.
Oh. I had never seen it, but Sharon had watched it. And then we ended up buying it. And I don't know that I'd call it a horror movie. It's more of a suspense thriller. Have you seen Mr. Brooks?
I have. Yeah, I think it's more of a suspense thriller. It fits on the list.
And again, there's another one of those guys that usually he's, you know, the hero and this and that. And no, he's a serial killer. Okay. Oh, no. But I don't know. And maybe it's because I'm not used to seeing him like that, that I was just like, oh, wow, you know, that was a really nice change of pace.
I wasn't as enamored with his work in that bad guy role as I was with him in A Perfect World. I actually thought he was better.
Oh,
yes.
He was
a better bad guy in A Perfect World than he was in Mr. Brooks. But I've had a lot of people say exactly what you said about Mr. Brooks, that they loved him in that as being the killer. And,
see, in A Perfect World's another one of those ones where it's like, I guess he does say he's a bad guy. Are you a bad guy, Butch? Oh, yeah. That's such a good movie, though.
It is.
That ending scene where, well, it's a 30-year-old movie. We kind of did, but boy, when it's in the field and, oh, my God.
It's definitely a downer movie.
Yes. But... Oh, no, you got to be, you can't be watching that movie when you're already depressed.
Right.
That's, oh, man. Well,
speaking of downer movies.
Yeah.
One person who made my list is Tom Berenger's performance as Sergeant Barnes in Platoon.
Oh.
One of my two or three favorite war movies of all time.
Nice.
So, yeah, I had to put Berenger on there.
That's a good one. Would you consider Arlie Ermey's character
a
bad guy?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I just didn't... I thought about putting him on the list, but I don't know. Just for me, he didn't... There were others that I thought deserved
correct.
To be there
yeah.
more. And since we're on the topic of war movies, I did also include Ray Fiennes' performances. I can't remember his name. Eamon Goeth, the Nazi monster in Schindler's List.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah. No, I didn't quite get there with,
nice.
With Arlie Ermey, even though that's a great performance. And
it is.
He's a great bad guy.
He's
a bad guy who creates yeah. another bad guy out of mm-hmm. Vincent D'Onofrio.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's...
Yeah. How about you?
Well, I want to... because you're
any
wearing
more
a,
robots?
Well, no, but
okay.
because you're wearing a John Carpenter shirt and you have a John Carpenter album, I want to throw a bone to my pop, probably my favorite villain of all time.
Uh-huh.
David Lopan.
Oh, man, I
from
had
Big
him
Trouble
on my
Little
list.
China. Did you really?
Yes.
No, I didn't think you... I mean, I don't know why I'm surprised, but I didn't think you would. But... James Hong, also in Blade Runner for a little bit there.
Yep.
So I was thinking about Lopan last night, which I usually am thinking about Lopan. And there's a band called Lopan that's like...
Is there really?
I think it's like from Columbus. So,
because
there were records at the record store from a band called Lopan, and it was in the local section. That aside, so I should say this. When I was a kid, I saw Big Trouble in Little China. I was so young, I thought that I had made it up for many years because I was like, there's no way that there's a movie like that. I rediscovered it when I was in college. I was like, oh, this was real. And because David Lopan is so old in that movie, I always thought James Hong was old. He's like 95 now.
Yeah.
But he's like, but I always thought he was like in his 60s, like for my entire childhood. So, but Lopan's just such a interesting villain. Such a weird movie. He's like the perfect villain for that movie,
yes.
though. It's like his style is just so weird. I don't know that I would say he's like one of the top 50 movie villains ever, but for me, he's up there.
Well, but no, but he makes... Is that movie as fun?
Right. Without Lopan?
Without him.
No.
Without that character.
I mean, and they even continued in the comics, the sequel comics, he's in it.
Yeah.
Because I just can't see it without Lopan.
Correct.
Because that's like... That's like Jack Burton's nemesis, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, so Lopan for me is the way to go.
Good choice.
Yeah. Look at you. Same wavelength.
Yeah.
Here we go.
See, I knew we'd have a lot of overlap.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
I'm surprised me and him, he's gone in different directions, and that's what I was hoping for. So
yeah.
I still got a couple of curveballs though, I think, so.
Well, throw me one.
Well, all right, you ready?
Yeah.
I'll do one of the old ones. Orson Welles, Touch of Evil.
Yep, I thought about it.
Yeah.
I thought about
that,
it.
That.
Can't argue with that.
It is, and most people probably that are going to listen to this probably don't even know what Touch of Evil is. I mean, clearly a B-movie, right? I mean, wouldn't you agree with that? I mean, you've got Charlton Heston as a... playing a Mexican diplomat, right, to America?
Yeah. Though, I mean, now it's considered one of the great.
Correct. I mean, but, I mean, yeah. it was not highly regarded for years.
Yeah, it was a genre piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know. But everyone, wouldn't you, because I know growing up, I've seen that final scene where he's shot and he kind of falls and turns. I know I've seen that in like other movies or TV shows where they've shown that someone's watching it.
Yeah.
So I can always remember seeing that. Mm-hmm. So I bet most people have seen that scene and they just didn't know what that was from.
Yeah.
But I had to put that on there because I was hoping no one else would have it. Yeah, but I mean, he corrupt cop, and it's just Orson Welles just kind of not giving a crap about. He's just obviously has started to go the way of, the girth.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
I tried to think of. To make sure I wasn't missing anything from famous film noirs, like surely there was a bad guy. And the best one that for me that jumped out was the character that Richard Widmark played. In,
yeah, that is a good one. I forget the name of the movie, but I know exactly what you're talking about. My problem is I didn't have, although we had plenty of time to research, I didn't have enough time to research. So
we've darn near hit everybody on my list with the exception of basically the two biggest ones in their own way. And that's, of course, Anthony Hopkins' portrayal of Hannibal Lecter in Silence of the Lambs, and then Norman Bates.
Anthony Perkins.
Those were the only ones that on my list that we hadn't talked about yet, but those are kind of two of the biggest ones, along with Joker. And
I mean, Hannibal Lecter's got to be the most, wouldn't you say, recognizable?
Yeah, almost.
I know we talked about Darth Vader.
Yeah, I would say after Darth Vader,
he especially for people of a certain generation, because I remember watching that just like, I mean, he was so creepy. And then you see interviews with Jodie Foster, and she's like, I didn't talk to him. We didn't do scenes together. It was, and I wouldn't talk to him on the set because he just creeped me out, and he just does it so well.
Yeah.
And then you see him play a guy like Bert in The World's Fastest Indian, and it's like, how is that the same guy?
Yeah, and so it's one of the few characters, so like Hannibal Lecter and Anton Chigurh, and then I did kind of have a sort of an honorable mention of Jude Law's character McGuire in Road to Perdition, those are... On most bad guys, you do learn something about their background, or you at least learn how they view themselves. Mm-hmm. Colonel Hans Landa, we know some of his background. We know what he thinks of himself. There's a couple on here, those ones I just named. We don't know anything about Hannibal Lecter's past. I mean, we learn it later in other films, and we know he was a doctor. But we really don't know anything about him. We don't know anything about McGuire in Road to Perdition.
No.
We don't know anything about Anton Chigurh, and in their own way, that makes them creepier.
Yeah.
Now, on the page, they probably looked pretty boring.
Yeah.
Right? The McGuire character in Road to Perdition, on paper, is very boring.
Mm-hmm.
But Conrad Hall, Jude Law, and the director, Sam Mendes, really turned that into a... Like, he's only in about four or five scenes, and he damn near steals that movie.
Yep.
A movie that has Paul Newman and Tom Hanks in it.
Yeah. Okay?
And he almost kind of steals it. Those are some unique characters where you literally know nothing about them.
Yeah. Oh, God, that's a good one. I almost put him on there. And one of the things was, it's like, he's only in a few scenes, but what does that matter? Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
And you just hate his guts
at
the end of that movie. Oh.
Yeah. And they leave it. They did a great job of making you think. I've not read the graphic novel, but I assume it all plays out the same way it does in the film. You know, you think he's left for dead, maybe after he gets shot and he gets the glass in his face in the hotel.
Yeah.
So they do kind of. I was not ready for him to show up and murder Tom Hanks.
No.
At the end, I was not prepared for
spoiler.
That. Sorry.
It's 20 years old. Get over it.
Yeah. Get over it.
Yeah. That movie. Well, let's see.
I think we hit.
We hit all yours?
I think so, yeah. Everything from Nurse Ratched and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest to... Yeah. But yeah, the vast majority of these are from 1988. Like I said, between 88 and 2007, I think, was Colonel Hans Landau. Well, that was 09, I guess. Yeah. So I don't know what it was. I think, you know, studios and screenwriters and directors said, let's start.
Well, yeah.
You know, why not? Yeah. Give them some interesting bad guys.
And exactly. I think it only strengthens the story and makes it more interesting. And plus, you can kind of play off of it. Mm-hmm. Especially, you can either make them mysterious like that and then you make them creepy, or you go the other route and you give them reason to be sympathetic, but then all of a sudden they do something really bad and you're just like, oh yeah, he's...
Yeah, one that I probably should have put on here and just didn't was Edward Norton's performance in Primal Fear.
Mm.
You know, talking about playing off each other, you know, I think he was so good, he overshadowed what is actually one of Richard Gere's better performances.
Yes.
It's easily one of his three or four best performances in a career of good performances.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that was probably due to being opposite Edward Norton in that movie, which was a complete surprise. Nobody knew who Edward Norton was. Mm-hmm. He came out of nowhere in that movie. And then I think the same year was when he was nominated for the Best Supporting Actor Oscar in the People versus Larry Flint. Mm-hmm. So he kind of came out of nowhere and was big.
And then he does Death to Smoochie.
I love Death to Smoochie.
Death to Smoochie is amazing.
It's hilarious.
Yeah. And Robin Williams.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely shouldn't have watched Death to Smoochie when I did. I was like 12.
Oh my gosh. Maybe.
It was on Comedy Central, and I was like, what is this? Robin Williams.
Well, at least it was censored.
Robin Williams
a little
is
bit.
In this. And I was like.
But again, one of those dark, you know, Robin Williams' darker stuff tends to be more interesting. Insomnia and One Hour Photo.
I almost put Insomnia and 1 Hour Photo on there because. His character, wasn't his character's name Cy in 1 Hour Photo?
Yeah. Cy the photo guy.
Yeah. Man, he was so creepy on that. It just gave me the heebie-jeebies.
Insomnia reminded me of a Michael Mann film.
Yes.
Because that is, again, a good guy and a bad guy kind of switching roles.
Yeah, because you got the cop who killed someone that they shouldn't have killed, and now we're just trying to... Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, here, I'll do a lightning round because I've got a few more left, and I'm going to leave one guy for last because, well, it's our podcast. So I had Wes Studi's character Mugwa from Last of the Mohicans. Again, it's another one of those characters, Michael Mann. It's like he's clearly the bad guy, framed as the bad guy. But when you look at, especially from a historical standpoint, and kind of take everything into context, it's like, is he really that bad? But,
yeah.
I mean, he's a great foil to Daniel Day-Lewis, and I can't remember who plays his adopted father. I can't remember his name. The one thing I'll say is that it never ceases to amaze me how quick his death scene is. Like, you know, they play out so slowly how he kills the son and then the one sister's, you know, just kind of pondering jumping off the cliff, and it's going so slow. And then literally the dad comes in and it's like 5 seconds and he's done. And it's like almost anticlimactic, but I wonder if it's done purposely because he doesn't deserve a grand death. I don't know, but
it's almost like, you know, well, Michael Mann did a similar feeling death scene at the end of Heat. I mean,
correct. Just,
kind of died
just boom, boom, boom.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh. And then I had, just for personal reasons, Chris Sarandon and Christopher Guest from The Princess Bride.
That's a good one.
I mean, I think anyone probably could have played those roles and the movie would probably still be fun and enjoyable and great. But Christopher Guest, especially as a man with six fingers, is just so creepy and just great in his little comedic way. And Chris Sarandon and his little pompous Humperdink, I think, is great. So I had them. They're not going to be remembered as the greatest villains of all time, but they really add to that cast. Yeah. And then I had to add this just because of the sci-fi nerd in me, and that's Ricardo Montalban in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. I mean, it's the movie that brought Star Trek back. You know, because after the motion picture, I can't believe they actually kept making movies. Because I mean, that is dog turds.
Yeah,
that, I can't watch that movie. But and I had forgotten because I was young when I watched all the you know, the original series on reruns and stuff with my dad. So I totally had forgotten that he actually played that character in the series.
Yeah.
And then they just kind of tweaked him a little bit. But I don't know. Again, won't go down in history. Hey, but yeah. For those of us who love the Star Trek movies, I think he's the best Star Trek villain. Now I'm sitting here thinking about some of the other ones, but I think I can say that.
I think that's a fair
assessment.
Did you have, I'm trying to read upside down.
Yeah.
Nobody has said yet, and he's not on my list, and I just didn't, it's nothing wrong with, but did you have Bill the Butcher, Daniel Day-Lewis's?
I did not.
Gangs of New York, okay.
Nope. And that's probably because, like a lot of the others, I didn't care for the movie.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm one of the guys, and I've got some friends who like love Goodfellas and this and that, and I'm the a-hole in the group that'll say The Color of Money is the best movie Martin Scorsese's ever made.
It was the first Martin Scorsese movie I ever saw. Just by luck of the draw and time, or how old I was, and I remember seeing it on TV, so I liked it a lot. So I didn't know at the time I saw that really what Goodfellas was and all that. It took some time for me to see all those, but yeah, no, I'm with you. I like The Departed. I appreciate it for what it is. I like watching it around St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
But yeah, when it, you know, if you're looking back at Scorsese's career and they're just like, oh yeah, that's the one. That's the one that he won the Best Picture Oscar for. And,
well, you know, it's
this man made Raging Bull.
Yes.
And like, okay. Yeah. But the Academy almost never gets it right. So.
Well, no, and then it turns into, well, he's done so many good things. Okay, we got to, let's give it to him for this. It's kind of like Russell Crowe winning it for Gladiator. Love Gladiator. Yeah. Love Gladiator. But, I mean, he should have won for The Insider. I mean.
Yes. He was, so good in The Insider. Another great Michael Mann movie.
Yes.
Public Enemies, great Michael Mann movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so what else did you still have? Because I didn't want
to. So I've got some Western ones. I'm just going to blow through the Western ones.
Bring it on.
I had Kris Kristofferson from Pat Garrett and Billy Kidd. Yeah. Kind of, we talked about,
yes,
is he the bad guy? Is James Coburn the bad guy? I had Leo DiCaprio from Django Unchained.
Sure. Oh, gosh. Yeah. No, I probably could have included him easily on my list. I forgot all about that.
I'm trying to think. I'm not the biggest DiCaprio fan. I like a lot of his stuff. I love Quick and the Dead, and there's I like The Revenant and all kinds of other things. But man, that role.
Oh, he steals that movie almost.
Yes, exactly. I mean, he makes it more interesting because, you know, it's a fine movie. I like the movie. I like Hateful Eight better than Django Unchained.
I do too.
But DiCaprio's performance in that is just amazing. Another one that's just sentimental is Brian Dennehy in Silverado.
That's a good one.
The way he's introduced, and again, you know, that's another one of those movies where it's like, well, you know, they're all kind of got their own things that make them good or bad, right? But I mean, he's just bad. You know he's not good. And he plays it so well with that smile, and it's just, I don't know, I love it. And that's one of Sharon's favorite Westerns.
Silverado.
Silverado. Absolutely love Silverado. But the last one, growing up as a John Wayne fan, as I am, and I know you're going to know where I'm going with this. This guy, for the longest time, I hated him more than anyone else from a movie, and that's Bruce Dern from The Cowboys. I didn't know anything about The Cowboys, and maybe my dad kept me from watching it for a while. I don't know. Because, you know, he didn't die in his movies. I knew he died in Saints of Iwo Jima, but it was all so quick, and, you know, it's one shot and now he's over and you don't see anything and nothing. But then you get in the Cowboys and he's older and he just gets that fight that the two of them have and then just gets gunned down in the back like that. It's just like, son of a...
Bruce Stern.
Oh. Yep. And he plays just that smarmy, just creepy dude so well.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he does. I'm almost surprised he didn't play more bad guys. I'm
right?
surprised at the amount of, you know, good guys that he plays.
Exactly.
You know who another one that from the 90s, Christopher Walken playing Hickey in Last Man Standing.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, doesn't have a ton of scenes, but nope. Boy, when he's on screen.
Mm-hmm.
There was another one, pre-88, that I didn't include on the list, but very well could have, was Alan Arkin's performance of, I can't remember the character's name, but in the Terrence Young film Wait Until Dark. I don't know if you ever saw that.
I have not seen it, but I know of it, yeah.
He was really good in that. And I think he got an Oscar nomination for that. So I could be wrong about this before we wrap up, but I wanted to look at this when we were talking about Javier Bardem's performance of mm-hmm. Carlos Silva, and how I think it got overlooked in terms of one of the best of the year. What year did you guys both see Argo, the Ben yes. Affleck film?
I did yep. not.
So, okay. Alan Arkin, so if you go back and you say, all right, well, who got nominated that Javier Bardem didn't make the cut?
Yeah.
Alan Arkin got nominated for Best Supporting Actor for his role in Argo. Now, Alan Arkin is a fantastic actor, and mm-hmm. he deserved to win an Oscar for his work in Wait Until Dark. There's
yeah.
no question in my mind. But there is nothing particularly memorable about his performance in Argo.
No.
Okay? So I'm looking at that, and I'm thinking, Javier Bardem should be in this spot. Okay,
yeah.
He should have been nominated in place of Alan
Agreed.
Arkin. I don't want to shit on Alan Arkin, but it's one of those when you look back in the history of film, and you're like, Heat got nominated for nothing?
Yeah.
Not one Academy Award Heat didn't get nominated for. You know, or you're going, Denzel Washington in Philadelphia didn't get nominated for an Academy Award. You know, these things, and you're
yeah.
just like... That is like a wrong that'll never be righted.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Yeah.
Do you think it's just because it was a Bond movie?
It may be.
Yeah.
I mean, it may be. Because, in my opinion, it should have won. It was nominated for Best Cinematography, and I think it's the first Bond film to ever get nominated for Best Cinematography, but it really should have won.
Mm-hmm.
So I think so. I think the Academy still doesn't quite, you know, Seven is one of the great serial killer movies, you know, it's David Fincher's one Academy Award nomination for film editing. You know,
yeah.
The Usual Suspects cracked, got two nominations and won them both, but that was one of the better films of that year.
Yeah.
So they tend to get it right kind of in the aggregate.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at the general list of nominees, they tend to get it right, you know, but when they're awarding the winners, it's like, you know, the year I was born, the movie that won Best Picture was Chariots of Fire. Now, give me a break. Okay? Like, I'm pretty sure E.T. came out that year. Like, I don't know if Das Boot came out. I mean, there's just this... They never get it right. But
mm-hmm.
But they tend to get it right scattershot, like in the aggregate. I know. We just digressed.
No, that's okay. That's why I still refuse to watch Shakespeare in Love. I can't believe it beat out Saving Private Ryan for
yeah,
Best Picture.
Right.
Come on.
Or even The Thin Red Line was nominated that
yeah.
year. I mean, I just... Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
No, I'm with you.
What else do you have, man? I kind of took over there.
No,
I'm sorry.
It's fine. I don't. I'm
glad you added sci-fi stuff.
Yeah.
Because I didn't.
That's my big contribution to sci-fi.
I think the only other sci-fi one I could add, if I, off the top of my head, would be Agent Smith from The Matrix.
Yeah, I would add him too.
That's a good one.
Hugo yeah. Weaving's.
And there's like 50 of him in.
There are.
In the third movie, or. Hundred of him, or hundreds,
and none of them are stunt doubles. It's
wow.
just Hugo
it's just
playing
him
all of them.
Playing
yeah.
all the, he's just moving really fast.
Yeah, that's
wow.
it.
That's
how good he is.
Yeah.
I remember trying to think, was there a Wachowski brothers, you know, movie that, you know, but I didn't, for some reason, I didn't think of him as being one of the best. I saw yesterday, this is unrelated, that Bound is getting a Criterion Collection release in June, so which I love. I think Bound is one of the great debut films from anybody. That was the Wachowski brothers' first film. Have you guys seen it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh gosh, Jennifer Tilly and Gina Gershon. It's basically a Jennifer Tilly is married to Joe Pantoliano's mafia character.
Okay.
And Gina Gershon is sort of like remodeling the apartment next to where this couple is staying. Jennifer Tilly and Gina Gershon end up hooking up trying to steal mob money. So it is awesome.
Mm. Okay. Bound.
Definitely worth it.
Interesting. Okay.
Anyway, it was fun. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Now, we got to say, Instagram. We still don't have Twitter, right?
Well, yeah, no.
It's still locked up. So Instagram or Facebook.
I got to get back on.
Tell us who your favorite villains are.
Yeah, definitely tell us who your favorite
villains
are.
Who did we miss? Because, you know, there's probably a good 100 or 200 we missed. We could probably make 2 or 3 episodes of this and go over them.
I would also say drop a picture of your favorite villain because sometimes I don't know who these people are, and so I want to visualize
you
them.
You want to visualize?
I want to visualize them. And if your favorite villain is Darth Vader, sorry.
Yeah, we hear you.
Yes. Hey, I agree.
It's funny because when I was looking at lists, Kylo Ren was also on the same list as Darth Vader.
Oh, now wait a minute.
Like, come on.
Stop.
Come on. Just because they're related.
Stop it. Has Kurt Russell ever played a bad guy?
He was on there for Death Proof.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I forget about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do I.
There were, Ray Liotta played a few, like, semi-memorable,
just...
you know, in the 90s, again, there was this string of what I call home invasion thrillers.
Unlawful Entry.
And Unlawful Entry was one of those, and I think that might be that and The Hand That Rocks the Cradle were probably the two best examples of that little subgenre. But Ray Liotta was really good in that.
That movie's one of the reasons Sharon would just get creeped out by him. She couldn't stand Ray Liotta for the longest time and really can't stand John Malkovich or David Spader. And I forget the movie that David Spader was in.
James Spader?
James Spader. Yeah. Oh, God, David Spader.
David Spader.
Good Lord.
Well, now Ray Liotta deserves to be on my list for his performance in Narc. Okay?
Yes.
I think just somehow in my mind... That's his best work, in my opinion, of his whole career. And most people will disagree.
Love Narc.
But I think he's great in Narc. By the end, though, it's one of those scenarios where you're like, he's kind of the good guy. but for 90% of that movie, he's the bad guy. He deserves to be on the
list. God, I forgot about that. We used to own Narc for the longest time. I don't think we do it. Dark Blue. Kurt Russell wasn't a great guy in Dark Blue either.
That's right.
Kind of came out the same time as Narc, I think. At least within a year of each other.
Yeah, I think you're right. Dark Blue, I think, came out after. But within a year or two of each other. You know, he was really good in Backdraft. Wasn't good, wasn't bad. I mean, he was, you know.
Yeah.
He was more of a good guy than a bad guy. Scott Glenn's really the bad guy in that movie.
Maybe he was the bad guy in the thing. Depends on what theory.
Depends on,
Depends on your conspiracy theory you adhere to.
And depending on what you got for Christmas, he might have been the bad guy in the Christmas Chronicles.
Oh, yes, that's true.
Netflix original Christmas Chronicles movie. If you got something you didn't like.
Yep. To heck with Santa Claus, Kurt Russell.
And they did lock him up, too. So.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, he's a criminal.
I want to see that horror movie, that Bone Tomahawk. I still haven't seen Bone Tomahawk.
Oh, it's brutal.
It is.
Brutal isn't good or bad.
Amazing.
It's hard for me to watch.
You will not be ready for it.
Yeah.
But it is great. It is, the dialogue in that movie is superb. Kurt Russell, and then what's the dad from Step Brothers?
Yeah, I can't think of his name.
What the heck's his name?
I'm having a brain fart.
Yeah, I can't think of his name. He's in it. He plays his deputy. And then Matt Fox is in it.
Really?
The one Native American actor who was in Longmire and now he's in Dark Winds.
Richard Jenkins?
With Richard Jenkins. Richard Jenkins is amazing in that. He plays that deputy so well. But Kurt Russell's character is just great. But it is gruesome.
Yeah.
And
I want to see it.
It is.
I want to see it.
I've got it on DVD. You're more than welcome to borrow it. It is.
If it's on Shudder, I may fire it up tonight.
It is fantastic.
One more honorable mention before we go is Jeffrey Combs' performance in The Frighteners as the weird...
Didn't think about The Frighteners.
Milton Dammers is the character's name. Yeah. Another one of those that in a just society that honored genre films, that performance would have gotten some sort of recognition.
You know, we should have mentioned Christopher Lee, as great of a man as he was.
True.
So many roles.
Yeah.
Know which one would stand out?
Yeah. I guess I don't need to tell the story for the podcast, but I will since you're here. Sharon watched The Wicker Man with me, and it was her first time ever seeing that.
Well, now you have to show her the Nicolas Cage version.
Right. I don't think she appreciated the movie. Christopher Lee is just so bonkers in that. Yeah. It's just the whole movie's bonkers. But
he did a lot of those.
Just made me think of that.
Christopher Lee.
Oh, God bless him. All right.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us. We'll have to bring you back for some other movie ones if you're willing sometime.
Heroes episode.
Oh, we'll have
a movie hero.
A movie hero antagonist.
Yeah, we'll take out the two of the obvious ones, but
yeah. I'd like to do that. I also thought it'd be fun to do a leading ladies of cinema.
Oh yeah, that would be good.
I thought that would be there's some really underrated movies we could talk about there.
Yeah.
But thankfully now you're starting to see more and more, like I want to go see Love Lies Bleeding. That just looks amazing.
It does. Very noirish. And, yeah. Kristen Stewart's a really good actress.
Right?
Yeah.
Who'd have thought it? Her and Robert Pattinson, both Twilighters. Here they are.
Don't get me started. You guys could do a whole episode on how goofy the Twilight movies are going to look. I mean, they already look ridiculous.
Yes.
But how ridiculous they'll look in 20 years.
Oh, my.
They'll probably have cult showings.
Oh yeah,
you know, the theater quote alongs.
The grandkids will be like, "You guys watch this?"
Yeah. Not only do we watch it, the two leads are very good actors.
Yeah. What? He's Batman.
He's Batman.
Oh gosh. All right, guys. Well, yeah. Hit us up on Instagram, on Facebook. Tell us what we missed. Tell us what you like, and we'll see you next time around. And stay nerdy.